Reading this morning is from Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 to 4, the call of Abram. The Lord had said to Abram, "Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and I go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So Abram left, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out to Haran.
Our topic this month is going to be called Turning Points. And I've added also in brackets my own words, in our lives, and also growth through change. And I've added also spiritual growth through change. Encountering God and his son, the first point there. Thank you. God was grieved by his creation. He created a perfect world for man to live in, but he didn't want robots loving him automatically. He wanted people to love him. He wanted his creation to love him spontaneously. And he gave them a free will. And I'm afraid sin entered into the world and grieved God's heart. God created Adam and sin entered into the perfect garden there. Then we read in the early chapters of Genesis, the sin of Cain and Abel, the first murder there. And man grieved God and he was determined then to wipe man off mankind, off the face of the earth. They'd grieved him so much, but yet there was one godly man there, and God saved him and his family, Noah. And yet man continued to sin. And it culminated with the Tower of Babel, where man really surpassed himself and thought, with our power, with our strength, with our knowledge, we can build a tower so high that can we reach up to God and make ourselves equal with him. And God was grieved by this. So he caused confusion, because in those days, there was only one language spoken in the world. God sent confusion by making them utter separate language, so no one could understand themselves. And that was abandoned. So God decided in his divine wisdom to focus his attention on one family, the family of Abraham. I will call him Abraham because Abram, I'm sure I'm going to get mixed up and use both words. So please forgive me. I'll take artistic license. Call him Abraham and Sarah now. We learn a little bit about Abraham in the preceding chapter when we learn that he was one of three brothers. And one of his brothers died fairly early in life. And Abraham and his wife Sarah settled and Sarah was very beautiful, as you will learn later on in Genesis. But they were of age and she was childless. So that was the one thing that really you'll find that is a recurring fact in the story of Abraham. Now, someone says to you at 75 years of age that we're going to get up and move. That's what God asked Abraham to do, the call of it. We don't know how God spoke to Abraham. But God said to a 75-year-old man and his wife, "You're going to move." It's not an easy thing in those days. It wasn't a case of calling up Pickfords and saying, "Right, we want to go up to Scotland. Please put it in." They had sheep, they had cattle, they had household people, and all of these would have had to be moved. So you can imagine there would have been some slight grumbling there as well. "Oh, the boss has told us we're all going to be moving again, on the go again. Oh, dear, oh, dear." And yet, when that reading was made by Jean there, God promises three things. In that reading, God said, "I will show you a land. I will show you. He promises to make Abraham's offspring a great nation with a long line of descendants, and also to give Abraham success. He will also have a very good name. So talking of our first point, which is encounters with God. How do we encounter God? Well, in the Old Testament, we read of God actually facing people face to face. For instance, Adam and Eve would have seen God in the garden. Then we have a Moses where he saw the burning bush and God encountered him through the burning bush. When he went up to Mount Sinai, he met with God there when he was given the commandments. In fact, the glory of God shone that he had to have a veil on when he came down. Such was the brightness. And then when we go into the New Testament, we see Paul on the road to Damascus, the dramatic conversion when a light shone from heaven that blinded Paul. And he said, "Who is this?" And it said, "It's Jesus who you are persecuting." So those are ways that God can talk to us. But there are other ways. And one of the most important ones now in 2025 is his word. Okay, we don't expect God to come and stand there in front of us. Also, through others, through events that take place in your life, and also the still small voice of the Holy Spirit. Now, I've been taking a young gentleman up to London with me over the last year. I've got to know him quite well. It's our dear friend Pete here. And we talk about a lot of things when we're in the car. We talk of spiritual things. We talk of members past and present here at this church. Do you remember when, you know, this person, that person sat there? Yep. And we talk about current things, football usually as well, records. But because Pete's a record collector as well as myself, I do Spitalfield shows and Bristol. And I thought Pete would like to come and join me. And I think he's really enjoyed it. One day in the beginning of December, I said that the series that I'm going to be talking on is a personal turning point in our life, and it's growing with God. And suddenly Pete said, "Have you ever heard my testimony?" And I said, "No, I haven't." And it was quite emotional because we sat there and for about 3/4 of an hour, he was telling me all about his life and how he was brought to Christ. And I would like Pete to come up now. I would invite Pete. Now, he's told me he's very nervous and he won't be able to stand here and talk. So we've got to remember the old Ray Warner questions and answers. Do you remember that? Right? There's going to be no questions about the the theory of Pythagoras and the hypotenuse and the square and the hypotenuse. Just simple things like we talk when we're in the car. Pete, what I'd like to do is to ask you, first of all, how did you show an interest in God?
First of all, today's service about light and dark ties in with my story because I was in a dark place. And it almost came to a point where I terminated. And in that present time, I was sat on the side of the bed thinking about, you know, this, that and the other. I didn't know what to do. And then all of a sudden this voice, it was loud and clear, and it just said, "Think of the family." And part of that was part of the problem. And from then on, I just pondered on what it meant. And then the point of coming into church, on the Sunday, Carol was coming to church with, I think, with one of the kids, and I just said, "Oh, I'll come with you." And that was the turning point. And, sorry.
No, I was going to say, you clearly remember the first time you came to church, didn't you? You told me.
Coming through the doors, you know, I've been in and out of the church throughout my life, coming to events, etc. But on that day, it was different. There was such a warm welcome. People said, "Oh, glad you're here. We've been praying for you." There was two female members that are no longer here. And they said, "God, that Carol, she's lucky." She said, "We've been trying for years and years to get our partners or husbands through the door, and they never came." And sitting in that service, listening to what was going on, I connected with certain things. When I left to go out, spoke to Dave, and he said, "Oh, Tom's come up to me and said that service was for you." Tom knew. And that's how things connect. You know, he didn't know what was going on in my life. He just said, "Oh, that was for me." Whether that's coincidence or not, but I don't believe so, because there's certain things after, throughout my Christian life that it can't be coincidence, because it just ties in.
Thank you. So would you say really that that was God speaking to you? A small voice. There you are, definite proof.
And in that last song it said, Jesus commands my destiny. And that's why we're here.
Thank you very much, Pete. Thank you so much. Sit there.
Oh,
give
I was
me.
Just going to say one more.
Please do. Sorry. Yeah. Beg your pardon. I'm rushing him here.
No, Carol said you're not going to be 3/4 of an hour, are you?
That's why I'm rushing him.
On that particular day, there was loads of things happening in the church where people moved on. Your Lizzie went to Africa, I think, and India. And there was a few others that were going to university. So it was quite a to-do in the church. And in the evening, there was a healing service, which was for Dave and for your Mick. We came to that. Tom led it. And there was things in there that he said, which spurred up something in me. So when Dave and Mick had been prayed for, Tom opened it up, and I came up with Carol. I mean, I beat her to the seat, and I sat there, and Tom prayed over us, and Dave and Phil did as well, and that was another turning point. The laying on the hands, and I've said this before, the relief of being prayed for and the laying of hands, it just raised me up. It was like, I call it the ready break. You know, when you had the ready brick,
the glow,
it just took me over. And there's so many things that I could tell you.
I think we deserve a sermon from Pete, don't you, folks? Okay, have a seat here. Come on, give me support there. Thank you very much. So this is what this church stands for, doesn't it? We think, you know, that we're small and insignificant. But when you see the lives that God transforms, you realised, and I'm so pleased that Pete came up, because I was really worried that I've kept it to 4 very simple questions, and I thought, please, just don't, it's not a yes-no interlude, you know, but he's surpassed himself. So that's how we talk in the car. There's no pressure. We just love doing that. In fact, I remember my father saying to me that one of the most powerful things that you can do is to give your testimony. I mean, you may not be well-versed in theology. It's not a case of getting into arguments with people and trying to get different points and outscore. Most important thing is your testimony. No one can argue with it, you see. It's true. It's from your heart. Person may not believe it, but they can see that what you're saying is the truth. It belongs to you. And no one can argue with that fact. It's there in black and white. This is what God has done for me. It might not be like Paul with a vision. It might not be like something dramatic. It just could be a small, still voice like Pete experienced, where God said, think of your family. And all the things that he'd heard in church came to focus and all seemed to fit in together. Charles Spurgeon, for instance, he was known as the Prince of Preachers. He was eloquent, erudite, and his sermons were so marvellous. They painted pictures where he could bring audiences to tears. He could raise them up from joy to tears. He was so eloquent. And when he preached at the Metropolitan Tabernacle at the Elephant and Castle, there was standing room only. There were so many people there that they sometimes had to fit in, more often than not, second services in the day for people who came to hear him. And yet, this brilliant preacher, how was he saved? Well, in January 1850, he was in a snowstorm, something like we kind of had yesterday, right? And he couldn't reach his destination. So he called into a small little primitive Methodist chapel in Colchester. And the man who was taking the sermon had just been seconded and said, go on, you can say something. And this man just had one simple verse, and it was Isaiah 45:22. Look unto me and be saved, all you to the ends of the earth, for I am God. And there is no other. And Spurgeon He was 15 years old at the time. He'd been seeking, and he couldn't really find God. He tried, but he didn't know how. And this preacher, not preacher, this person pointed at him and said, "Young man, I haven't seen your face before, but you look miserable. You need God." And all the sermon Spurgeon said was, "Look, you don't have to be a king. You can be a pauper. You don't have to be anyone special. We can all look." And the Bible says, "Look unto God." No matter what your standing or your station, we can all look. And that saved, you know, became the background for Spurgeon's conversion. What a wonderful preacher there he was. But don't forget Pete's testimony. I'm sure it's going to resound with people here. I'd never heard it until he told me in the car. But it was wonderful to hear it. And thank you so much again, Pete. Thank you very much indeed. The final point that I have is growth through change. We will all be facing challenges in this new year. It's inevitable. We're going to have personal challenges. We're going to have collective challenges and decisions. But the most important thing that I would say to you is this: Jesus should be at the focus of our thoughts and our actions. I'm going to read you something from Luke 10, 38 to 42, at the home of Martha and Mary. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary and also a brother called Lazarus, who we know about, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried, upset about many things. But only one thing is asked, one thing is needed. Mary had chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Martha, as you can see, was indignant. She was outraged that Mary was sitting there listening to Jesus. But Jesus gently and lovingly reminds her that of her spiritual priorities. Doesn't matter what time we have the meal, you could be saying, "If it's 20 minutes late, does it really matter? You're only going to have me here for a little while. You'll be serving plenty of meals when I'm gone. But you've got me here." Mary is doing the right thing. It's our love and devotion to Jesus and seeking things which have eternal value, which Mary had identified there. And I had to smile as I'm closing now when it came to mind about Jean reading about Abraham. We are a small little church. Jesus promised Abraham a nation that would be so many his descendants would number the sands on the sea that you couldn't count them. This is the same God that asked Abraham to come, who we speak to now. It's the God who promised that when we turn to him, he will listen to us. He will not let us down. My final closing verse is in the first 1 Peter chapter 5 verse 7. "Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you." Don't get caught up in all the works that we have to do here. Yes, they're important. Martha knew that she had to do this. The works here are important. But the main thing is God is still there. He's unshakable. He's eternal. And no matter what we think we're facing, we know that we face a God who's unchangeable and will draw near to us, and we will hear his voice in however we speak. So may we be open to listen to what he has to say. Thank you. Thank you too, Pete.